Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin, coming at you guys with another discussion topic, something that I think is, it's very relevant. It's a little bit near and dear to me, as this is some of the stuff that got me very much interested in the tactical space and the training space, learning more, understanding more. Because I think a lot of times we can all look back and we can reach and point to specific things, specific instances where we got hooked on something. We wanted to know more. We didn't know what it could be anything as mundane as, hey, what is that thing on the end of that dude's rifle, right? For me, I remember seeing one of the very early T-Rex Arms videos where Lucas talked about how he set up his, I think it was a 13.7, 13.9, whatever, his chopped rifle, right? And he had it's either an LA-5 or a PEC-15 on the end of it. And if those of you guys, if that sounds like I'm speaking, you know, Chinese to you, that those are laser aiming modules or LAMs or LAMs or whatever. Or sometimes people will call it a PEC unit, you know, and they'll just call every laser, regardless of what it is some kind of PEC unit. And I had no idea what that was. It's a laser. And that was very interesting to me and very confusing at the same time. So, well, the laser pointers that I've always ever been aware of in video games were super small, very tiny, literally just a visible laser emitter. And then I didn't understand the use of night vision for the infrared spectrum and things like that. But that was one of those things, right? It was one of those instances, right, where you see something, you are instantly interested and curious in what's going on, and you start diving down a rabbit hole. Now, granted, back then we didn't have the resources that we do now, where you could just look in the comment section, somebody would say it. You didn't necessarily have the mechanisms to reach out directly to that influencer. Now, you could leave a message on Instagram, and I think back in the day you could direct message, but I don't even remember how I figured out what it was. I think I did leave a comment, maybe somebody did respond. I don't remember exactly, but we're going to talk more about gear in this discussion and why the choices that you make when you set yours up are very important. But we're specifically going to look at it from a lens which I think is very applicable to so many folks out there in the industry. It's something that, you know, I've personally done myself. I've been guilty of this, right? I'll own it. I'll own my shame. I'll live my truth, you know, but I've had it done to me, right? And that is... copying other people's gear, copying their gear setup. And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. We see it with like airsoft people a lot. And in a lot of cases, it's an homage to things that have happened throughout history, whether that's like the Black Hawk Down, the chocolate chips with the black gear over it, right? At least I think that's what they wore. Maybe it's the DCUs. I don't honestly know, because that's how far removed I am from some of that stuff, right? Or it could be your favorite influencer within the last 2-3 years. I've had guys I train with that have emulated my gear to different degrees, whether it's, oh yeah, I mean, you run that optic, so I'm gonna go buy that optic. You run that carrier, so I'm gonna get that carrier. You know, and maybe in some instances even more. Like, it's flattering to a degree. But I think, and I'm not necessarily trying to throw shade, right? I think it's important that we talk about the decisions that are being made. And if it just so happens that you and a buddy end up aligning 95% or 90% on what you choose for varying reasons and things, I think that's totally fine. Very cool, right? As long as you've been thoughtful in the selections that you've made and have good reasoning and rationale behind why you did it. So that's what I'm going to get into. But before I jump into that, you guys, we have some industry partners that are sponsors. Yes, Prepared Mindset is actually a sponsored podcast. If you guys are joining us for the very first time here, welcome in, and you get to hear about some fantastic companies that support what Prepared Mindset is all about. And that has to, of course, start with our friends over at Custom Night Vision, you guys. The website is customnightvision.com. I actually just had a great phone call with Ben, the owner, yesterday for about an hour, talking about all kinds of good stuff that Custom Night Vision has going on. And dudes, I cannot be more upfront with you when I say that, A, Custom is a fantastic company. Their goal is literally to provide you all the most transparent purchasing experience possible. So if you go head over to the website, in the lower right-hand corner, there's a chat function. You're going to get either Trevor or Kevin or Ben, one of those three dudes over at Custom. They're going to be answering your questions, and they're going to be consultative, right? They're going to talk to you. They're going to ask about, what are you looking to do with your night vision? What are your constraints? What are your limitations? What do you want, right? Let's make this work for you in ways that you know it can, but then also in the ways that you don't know that it can, right? So that comes in the way of what kind of tubes you might want, the housing you might be looking at. You might not even know some of these other options are out there. I've had people tell me they bought 31 alphas years ago, sold them, and they didn't realize that there were other housing options available on the market. Head on over to customnightvision.com and you can check out all of the housings, all of the intensifier tubes they have available, whether that's single tube housings, monoculars, binocular, dual housings, things like that. And they have a whole ton of other great options available for you as well, whether it's the thermal scopes and optics from DNT. They stock the full line there. They have bump helmets and ballistic helmets from Team Wendy, which are fantastic options. If you guys have never worn a helmet before, Team Wendy is one of the tops in the market for comfort and reliability. Their retention system is absolutely outstanding. And they also carry laser devices from companies like B.E. Myers and Steiner and Wilcox, all the accessories that you need to go from zero to one and make a complete night vision setup. So again, head on over to customnightvision.com. That's the website. Let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset sent you over. They're going to take fantastic care of you. And guys, go get the superpower that you can buy. Again, it's customnightvision.com. Also, want to say a huge thank you to the team, our friends over at Harrington Arms, you guys. Their website is harringtonarms.com. That's Harrington with an E, and I always get that one wrong. And if you guys don't follow them on social medias, you probably missed the announcement, but you want to go check it out. They announced their Hacker Combo barrel and compensator kit, but it isn't just a barrel and a compensator. There's a couple companies out there that do that pretty well. You know, there's some names out there you guys would recognize, but what the Hacker system is going to provide that's different is a QD button quick disconnect. So with the help of a very small tool, maybe even just your fingernail, you can depress the button, you can remove that muzzle device, you can remove that compensator, and you can attach a QD that has threads. So you can attach a suppressor or a barrel weight. So if you're shooting competition, you know, you can't have a threaded barrel because of whatever class, you can't have a comp because of whatever class. It's an outstanding system. It's very, very cool, and I'm super excited about it, you guys. Head on over to harringtonarms.com and check that and everything the team has in store for you guys over there. So thank you to both those companies for their outstanding support of the Prepared Mindset podcast. It is super cool to be able to call these people partners in business, right? But friends, you know, I talk to Ben and Kevin and even Trevor over at Custom Night Vision on a pretty regular basis. Kevin's been on the podcast. Jake over at Harrington Arms has been on the podcast two or three different times now, talking about everything from compensators to law enforcement to shooting standards. So it's really, really cool that these are the relationships that we have in the industry and that they're supportive of what our goals and our mission here at Prepared Mindset are. So all of that said, you guys should definitely go check them out. But what we're talking about this week, gear is not a one size fits all solution. Okay. And I want to be really clear with that because, you know, and so here's a great example. You know, and not even a gear example, I had this happen to me over the weekend, right? I went out shopping. My wife had a hair appointment, just like a trim or something. And there was a Sierra next door. And if you guys know what Sierra is, I wasn't really super aware. My wife had to explain it to me. It's like one of these like TJ Maxx, like closeout stores, right? So when other companies, other stores can't sell out of their product, right? They will sell it at a severe markdown, right? To stores like, you know, Home Goods and Marshalls, TJ Maxx, and Sierra. Now, Sierra is a little bit different because it is focused on outdoor applications. So you're going to get more rugged clothing and hats and shoes and packs and stuff like that, which I was like, that's pretty freaking awesome. I'm going to go check that out because that's right up my alley, especially with fall rolling around the corner. So headed on in there. Decided I would, you know, kill some time, just look around, and I found a flannel I really liked, and I wear about, I try to buy like a 2XL in my flannels, because if you guys have seen any of my videos on our YouTube channel, shameless plug, not so shameless, I am a bigger guy, so I usually run a 2XL in my sizing, so that way it's comfortable, I have room to conceal carry without printing, and then if there is any kind of like shrinkage in the laundry, then it still fits. And a lot of those shirts, you know, they get a little bit smaller, but then I can wear them for years and years because I'm not super rough on my stuff and I try to buy pretty decent brands of clothing. And I found a flannel that I really liked from a company called Fjällräven, which I think it's F-A or F-J-A-L-L Raven. And if you guys haven't heard of Fjällräven, I believe it's a European brand. And my buddy John has a pair of their pants that he's actually like patched them together and stuff. He's had a couple holes in them, like they're years and years old, and he loves them. So they're really, really good. Excuse me, really comfortable. And I was like, you know what? I've been looking for some of their stuff. And this thing, it was like $110 or $120 shirt. It was like marked down to like $35 or $40. I'm like, I'm going to grab it, you know? And I, of course, like a dingus, I did not try it on before I left the store. You guys can already tell where this is going to go. So I get home, whatever, and go ahead and go try it on. And my God, this thing fit like a large. Like, these buttons were screaming for mercy. I go, that's European sizing. That's definitely European sizing. So I, you know, you take it back, you return it. Luckily, you know, they have a pretty generous return policy and window. I did it next day because I just had the availability, but it was like 30 days in store, which is, if you still do any shopping in store physically, right, 30 days is about normal. But for gear that we're talking about, there is not always such a generous return policy on some of that stuff. And we'll probably get into like the financial side of things, but I will point out that for a lot of you guys that are buying, you're buying gear, right? You're stepping into your very first vestiges of the tactical space and your accoutrement and everything, right? A lot of these places don't just allow for easy returns. There's a restocking fee. I've seen restocking fees from 10% up to, like, unfortunately, something like 40% restock fees on some items. And then some items just don't let you return them at all. So stuff that is like PPE, so body armor, gas masks, face masks, things like that, because of the nature of those, a lot of them, they won't let you return it. So like buy once, cry once can have multiple meanings when we say that, because I've seen all of this stuff where people go buy a helmet or something and they don't use the measurement tool correctly, or they just, I'm usually a small, my head is usually small and it is too big to fit the small size that the company has. Or, hey, I tried on my buddy's OpsCore helmet, right? And I wore a medium there, so I'll be good to go in a medium from somebody else like Team Wendy, right? Well, Team Wendy doesn't do the same sizing that OpsCore does, and Team Wendy in a lot of their helmets used to only do two sizes. They had a small medium, and they had a large extra large, and I have seen it numerous times where people buy the wrong size, and then they have to go try and sell it, and they say it's been worn once to be tried on, I need to get a different one. Here's the problem with that is that with used gear, people are not going to pay MSRP. Right, unless it's a buddy that knows for a fact, like, that you just got it and everything and happen to get the money themselves to buy it from you. And even then, they're expecting some kind of a small discount. But you could say anything. You could say, oh, it's been worn once. Yeah, but it could have been worn 50 times and you just know how to clean it up real good or, you know, whatever. So buyer beware with that stuff. But just because someone else has it doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You know, and the question I would ask, if any of you guys have been in this activity or hobby or lifestyle for any amount of time, is have you ever bought gear just because someone else had it and then you freaking hated it? I'm not against buying gear, obviously, because we're having a discussion because I want to help you guys make better decisions and, you know, potentially share some horror stories and things. Like, I'll be the first to admit, I bought my first plate carrier. It was a Condor, which I think that's pretty typical for a lot of us. You know, we don't want to admit it, right? It's like hooking up with a fat girl, right? You're ashamed to talk about it. And, you know, I was like, you know, hey, I didn't know any better. Hey, it's Condor. They got this huge catalog of stuff. I feel like I've heard the Condor name just being around a couple of, military surplus stores, you know, and I had seen the movie 13 Hours. When that came out, I was like absolutely obsessed with that movie, mostly because I think it was probably one of the very first truly accurate depictions of battle and combat where you didn't see like really poor weapons handling, weapons transition. You didn't see really poor looking helmets and gear and kit and whatnot. And I took the opportunity looking at a picture of John Krasinski and the plate carrier that he had on, which I believe when I looked it up later, I mean, it could have been years later, right? I think it was an Eagle. And Eagle is a company that's been around forever. They make fantastic gear that's, I think, albeit a bit outdated in a lot of regards. But one of the companies that certainly when you watch the live streams and things when Lucas Botkin was with T-Rex Arms talking about getting gear off eBay, a lot of the stuff he got came from Eagle. And it is able to be had for really cheap because it's used and abused and it's beat to hell, but it's still in great condition because it is made to last. It was made to fulfill military contracts. So I saw this picture and it's at the end of the movie when I think it's, John Krasinski and Tig and Boone and Tonto, right? And they're walking down the runway or whatever, and you get a real good look at the plate carrier. And you guys know what I'm talking about, right? It's just got like straps and buckles on the sides, so not really a cummerbund to speak of. And it's kind of loose hanging off them, and it looks all dirty and gritty and grungy because he just went through, in truth, right, the fight for their lives and everything. And I'm not saying that that's exactly the kit that they wore in real life. I think there's a disclaimer in the movie, honestly, that those are not accurate, the weapons and the gear and everything, but it's what he had. And I, like an idiot, saw that. And then I found that Condor plate carrier and go, wow, I went back and forth like 8 times going, that looks exactly the same, man. And of course, the product photos are not the greatest, right? And this is years and years ago. This is probably 10, 12 years ago, honestly, now. Not 12 years ago, probably about 10, I think. And at any rate, I bought it and I was like, man, this is going to be awesome. And then I went on eBay and bought steel armor plates because, no one told me not to. And there are people who are in the military that advocate for steel. And they were cheap. They were in my price range, like $100 or something. So I did it. So starting with just the plate carrier, buying it, not because I knew anything about it, because I knew anything about what I needed, but purely because of what it looked like for someone, even a fictional character, relatively fictional, right? Because I know that was a real person in real life, but, you guys get what I'm saying. That was a terrible choice for a plate carrier. It had very uncomfortable shoulder straps with minimal padding, especially when you put, 10-pound armor in the front and the rear. The worst part of it for me was I hated having to molly on and molly off attachments. This particular carrier, because it did not have any kind of cummerbund system to speak of, it didn't have a kangaroo pouch. So I had to then go buy a magazine pouch off of either probably Amazon or some kind of surplus store and molly that on. But then the frustrating part was there was an even number of molly columns on the front, meaning it bothered the shit out of me. I could not evenly place this placard on the front of the carrier. And that was something I didn't think about. I didn't look into. And most people don't. That's just a poor design because it's not the real carrier. It's a replica of that carrier. The straps on the side, I couldn't tighten those things down enough. Like, I'm a big guy, but that thing moved around everywhere. I couldn't tighten it down. I couldn't get it to feel like it was comfortable or I felt confident in what it was going to do to protect me and everything. The steel was so heavy and so uncomfortable. And the worst part is the plate bags, right, the front and the rear, are literally, they're almost like triangular or trapezoidal shaped, if you can imagine that. And they're just stitched as bags. There's not like a sleeve or a pocket that the plate fits into. So there was a ton of side-to-side movement with this armor plate. Actually, with both armor plates. And so it was super uncomfortable. The armor shifted in the carrier. The carrier shifted all over on me, on the body. Because, I watched a video on how you're supposed to size your plate carrier. I cinch up these straps and everything. And then it impedes your ability to get your stock in your shoulder pocket correctly because of how wide it is on the front. And everything about that plate carrier was just absolute garbage. It was absolutely and completely terrible. And I still have it because I think I did sell one with the two plates. I had two of them, one for me, and then my twin brother got the same setup and gave it to me. He goes, here, you hold on to it. You do more with this than I do. I did sell one to somebody because they just wanted it desperately. And they were like, for $50, like, I could use it for PT. I go, all right, look, if you know what you're getting into here and is not great, and you are willingly doing it, then fine. I will sell it to you. I will feel fine because I have explained to you that this is not a good decision. I've told you not to do it, and you've told me you still want to do it anyways. Okay, God bless, whatever. I don't even know that gentleman. I actually lost contact with him. I don't know if he still uses it. I hope it was everything that he had, thought that it would be. But that was my, my first instance, right, of making gear selection, gear choices for the absolute worst reasons. And you just have to say, I'm saying my first, right? You guys noticed that, right? Because it wasn't the last time. It was definitely not the last time that I bought kit for the absolute worst of reasons. And I'm not saying that buying something because somebody else has it is a bad idea. That's how we see new gear. Like, you meet people at classes and at range days and stuff, and you go, hey, what is that pouch you got there? Oh, hey, look how you ran that. Can I check that out? Who'd you get that from? What is that company called? Oh, here, let me get my phone out. You know what I mean? That's how we find new gear and stuff. I get that. But there has to be some intelligence behind the decision. And what we end up falling into as individuals a lot of the time is, you know, this because my buddy has it syndrome. And this is something that, and I say this kind of tongue in cheek, I think that's the right phrase, because I do have a YouTube channel. I do run an Instagram, and I do make reviews of the gear that I run for educational purposes, although I'm sure people can look at it, misconstrue it, or misunderstand and think that I'm trying to tell folks, you know, hey, go buy this. And I mean, spoiler alert, I get very little stuff given to me in terms of my gear. But, you know, hey, if you want to be hypercritical of it, I actually appreciate that. And I think it's always better to do more research than not enough. But the point being that the culture on social media has driven so many of these trends, and buying without a purpose leads to wasted money. And then that turns into, I can tell you this firsthand because I'm looking around my basement right now as I'm recording, and it leads to clutter, and I'm seeing it, and then frustration, because ultimately what you thought you were buying that's going to work for you is not going to work for you. And if you know, you can buy stuff because you like the way the look of it. And if you're a grown man, right, like you make your own money, you have your own job, you do these things, like, dude, more power to you. Go collect gear. If you're operating under the guise that you're just going to throw a plate carrier on your wife when, you know, shit hits the fan, that's not necessarily going to be true. You know, I actually had my wife try on the T-Rex Arms AC1 with some standard plates I got from, oh, I can't remember what company. They're not multi-curve, okay? And my wife is rather well endowed, so it was a very awkward fit for her. And that's something that, you know, you need to be aware of when you're buying armor. If you're a lady listening to this, now I will say we do have a discount code for RMA Armor. It's RMADefense.com is the website. Our discount code is prepared mindset 5 if you want to go check this out, or if you want to get something for your wife. They do have female armor where you can get a standard rear plate, but then the front plate is curved to fit a woman's body, which is a really cool thought. And to the best of my knowledge, they're the only one out there that actually does that. And they even go so far as to have a very specific plate carrier. I think it's called the Queen. That fits that curved plate. And one of the people that comes out and trains with us every week at Battlefield CQB, she wears that carrier, so I know it works. I don't necessarily know that the Swift clips that they use with it is the best, but you can get G-hooks for that, and it'll solve that problem really, really quickly. But it does exist, it does work, and it is a good idea, because her body shape is similar to that of my wife. So it's something I'm looking into for my wife. Again, you guys, RMA is an American-made company. I have no problem recommending them. Use the discount code, save some money. You know, you help support Prepared Mindset a little bit, but I digress. With a lot of this stuff, it becomes trendy. And that's one of the biggest problems that so many people have had with the gear conversation in the last 5, 7, 10 years, whatever, is that it becomes trendy. You know, for a while there, we were looking at a lot of these things, a lot of these military style plate carriers and JPCs and things. And then you start getting content creators out there, guys like Lucas and Grand Thumb, that introduced the world somewhat anyways to slick plate carriers. Now, to the best of my understanding with the concept of a slick plate carrier was that this was to be used under clothing originally. It was just a plate carrier with an elastic cummerbund and minimal padding, and it could be worn under a jacket or a light shirt, and it was very concealable, right? It wasn't bulky, not like, you know, you think about some of these flak jackets and some of the vests and things that you see from the early GWAT and everything. There's huge, bulky, Michelin Man-looking setups, and you guys can all kind of envision what I'm talking about when I say that, because we still see folks that go to airsoft events that look exactly like that, where they carry like 20 mags on their person. And I say the Michelin Man because they are so packed up with gear. It's like the little brother from fucking Christmas Story. That's it. The little brother from A Christmas Story, where they put the snowsuit on him and he can't put his arms down. Yeah. Anyways, you guys know what I'm talking about. And people will run setups like that because they're convinced of every little thing that they're told on the internet. Oh, if you get into a firefight, you want 7 mags minimum. And it's like, yes, I do get that. I do understand that. Is that the most likely scenario for me living in America? Well, probably not. But we went to the opposite side of the pendulum. So the pendulum swung back, and now we're at these slick plate carriers. And the next iteration was, well, could we take it a step further and make them modular where we could just, you know, put a couple cuts in the front of it and we could interlace these Swift clips, which are just little plastic clips that allow us to clip in a placard and then Velcro it to the front of the carrier. So you have an elastic cummerbund and then you have a placard system of some variety. You know, it was really popular to run the Spiritus Mark IV for a long time. And it's a fantastic placard, and Spiritus makes outstanding kit. Nothing bad to say about any of the Spiritus gear, or Faro, you know, cause I had two different Slicksters. You know, I was a big fan of Slick carriers for a long time, but you know, I didn't know what I didn't know at the time. And essentially you took this concept that was made for covert usage and then it kind of got bastardized into this new concept. And then you see, you know, so you have the Slickster from Faro, you had the LV119 from Spiritus, and then, you know, T-Rex decides they're going to make their own carrier that solves a couple of the issues that they saw with slick carriers at the time. And I bought into that stuff. I really liked it. I really liked the whole concept of being the modern Minuteman and everything. And I still do. I'm not throwing shade at it. I'm not completely hating on that idea. But I really have become not a fan of the AC1, and I held on to it, right, because it's well made, and I have two sets of armor plates, so might as well have an extra plate carrier. And yes, in a pinch, my wife could wear it, but it really just, you know, not the greatest. You know, those elastic cummerbunds can stretch out over time. They are limited in their use and capacity. It's really difficult to mount armor solutions to those. So if you want to wear soft armor or even 6x6 hard armor plates, on your sides, it's a pretty flimsy platform to attach to. There have been improvements. You know, see, some of these cummerbunds now have pockets stitched into them, and some of them even have like retention loops, so you can run shock cord over it to help secure stuff into your cummerbund. But there's just a lot of limitations to it. And then you see people try to build these things out. They got a expander wing for the radio on one side, an expander wing on the other for, you know, a fixed blade knife, and then they, you know, the cells on the pockets that are stitched into the cummerbund. They've got something in every single one of those. Oh, I got a pistol mag in the first ones, and then I got a rifle mag in each of the next ones, and then I got med behind that, and you just build up this platform, and it becomes this very, very heavy monstrosity, and then people put a backpack on over it, and they go, you know, hey, I did this because this is what Lucas did to show you what you could do. I don't think in a lot of his videos he was realistically telling you, go do this, and in fact, he actually preached the opposite, which was mission dictates gear, right? And make choices based on your own mission. Here's what you could do. Here's ideas for what you can do. Not necessarily saying that you should do these things, but people ran out and did it anyways. And I hate a lot of that stuff. I don't find wearing a backpack over a plate carrier to be, you know, this is just my personal experience, right? Comfortable. I really hate seeing guys do the chest rig over a plate carrier, because I think while it does work, if you are limited, I think there's so many better options out there. I really do. But, you know, it became trendy to do all of these things. And I think we're maybe seeing some of it swing back a little bit. You're starting to see with, like, just my opinion again, you know, guys like Forward Observation Group, where they do their videos, and those guys are all running like LV119s. They're running FCPCs and JPCs and MBAVs, or, you know, not the MBAV, what's the AVS, I think, the Cry AVS. And you're starting to see some of that more, I don't know, structured approach to your plate carriers and your nylon gear taken, and really adopted, you know, because one of the things that we do a lot now as civilians is we train in groups. You know, we go out and shoot in groups, we train in groups. I consistently train with the same group of people on Thursdays. So I made decisions in my gear that, you know, reflect that. I don't have to have a slick back panel. I can utilize my back panel on my plate carrier because I'm running with other individuals. That's something that I can account for. But you have to understand what you're trying to achieve, what your goals are, what you're, just like Lucas said, right? What your mission dictates. And it's going to be different depending on what you're trying to do and who you are. So it's very context dependent, you know, and that means if that means you have to have multiple setups, or at the very least buy into a platform that is capable of being set up in multiple ways, then that's something you have to be aware of. That's your responsibility as the consumer to be cognizant of that, right? And to go ahead and make your purchase accordingly. And at the end of the day, right, if you do it well, then it'll work well for you. And if you do it poorly, and you buy a carrier that offers you nothing but an elastic cummerbund and two plastic clips, then that's what you're going to have to work around. And if that's all you can afford, like, I'm not trying to tell you that you're going to be a failure for not having something a little bit more robust with a little bit more capability to it. What I'm trying to tell you is do the research and make an informed decision, all right? And if that means you have to save up for another couple of weeks to get into something that is going to serve you better, that's what you have to do. I mean, people do that same thing all the time when we talk about buying a vehicle for a family. You're not going to go out and buy a Mustang because this used Mustang is cheaper than the brand new minivan that you need because you have three kids. And you're like, well, I don't know. I'll just buy it because it's what I can afford. And it's like, well, yes, but is that the right decision? Or could you limp by with what you have for another couple of weeks and save up a little bit more money and get that better option for, you know, what you're doing, what you need? And it may not be the greatest of comparisons, but I hope you guys get the idea. Now, depending on what you're trying to do with all of your gear, and I've been talking a lot about plate carriers, but this includes everything. It includes belts, holsters, all of it, right? So if you're a competitive shooter, that is going to be a different need, different set of equipment that you're going to need, right, than law enforcement or military or civilian use for preparedness and preparation, as well as for concealed carry. There's people that try to find, you know, every company, right, that tries to sell these Omni products, right? Like, I think Blackhawk even makes one called the Omnivore, right, which is a holster that's going to fit every handgun and light combination or like 150 of them. And I don't know that that's a bad product. I'm not saying that it is. What I will say is that in my personal experience, and I've never used that holster, is that any product that promises to cover 100 different contingencies and problems is usually good at none of them. And that's, I'm sure a lot of us have had that experience. But all of those different roles we just rattled off there, you know, police, military, competitive shooting, civilian preparedness, right? Your environment, mission, lifestyle, those are all very different, right? And they should dictate your gear choices. So, you know, if you are somebody who doesn't have an interest in overtly training in kit for whatever reason, right? You just don't see the need or whatever. You're probably not going to be open carrying with your handgun. Then you don't need to go buy a plate carrier and, you know, a battle belt with a Safariland, you know, holster on a drop rig from True North Concepts or Safariland or something. In that case, then a really, really good concealed carry belt, like something from Next Belt or Core, right? And then a concealed carry holster, whether that's something like an appendix rig made out of Kydex, or, I mean, it doesn't have to be an appendix. It could be something for, you know, strong side, you know, carry, but I do usually recommend either Kydex or a really, really good quality leather holster. There's pros and cons to both. I just don't get cheap holsters and don't get the nylon ones, the Uncle Mike's and stuff that you get from big box stores. Please, please, you guys. And actually, I actually think that I was at Cabela's this weekend. I don't even think Cabela's carries those Uncle Mike's anymore. I could be wrong. You guys can definitely correct me on that. Although I don't go out of my way looking for them either because I know that they're absolutely disgustingly terrible. But if you applied the wrong solution to the wrong context, right, my point here is that you're going to get poor results or the wrong results. And oftentimes that's what you will see people do, right? You'll see them try to take what they have and apply it to a situation. They give it the old just as good, and it really isn't. Now, yes, I understand and acknowledge that there's financial restraints and restrictions and constraints to every one of these issues. I know not everybody has the money to just go out and spend $150 on a different Safariland holster because they changed their weapon light or their optic, or it wasn't the one that they initially thought that they needed. And rather than looking up ways to alter or modify that holster to make it work, they just want to buy another one. You know, you have to understand that you as the consumer, probably in this space more than any other, have more responsibility. Okay, because you have payment platforms that are blocking us all the time and making it harder for companies to do e-commerce business, that places a lot of the burden on you because the companies can't afford to be doing all these RMAs without restocking fees. They can't afford to, you know, do some refunds on stuff that's sensitive equipment. So, you know, whether that's plates or a respirator or something like that, like there's a lot of different considerations. It's not the same as when you go to a big box store, buy a sweatshirt and it doesn't fit. It's stuff you got to be cognizant of and you need to be aware of. So as we're going through this, you know, maybe the questions that you're having are more around like, how do I know what I need? Is there a way to figure this out? What problem is this going to solve, or set of problems even, right? Is my gear going to solve for me that I have now or that I'm looking at? Maybe that's a good question you sit and you ask yourself. Hey, I'm looking at buying this, 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 and I already have this, this, and this. What problems? And make a list. You know, I'm a big list guy. I will literally get a pad of paper and a pen out. I was out at the bar with my wife last night, meeting a couple of her coworkers before the Lions game. And I literally pulled out, we're just casually hanging out, pulled out a Write in the Rain pad and a pen and started looking some stuff up on my phone and started making lists. Because that's just how my brain works. And, you know, maybe it was probably a little bit rude. But if there's a lull in the conversation and it's not rude for you to, you know, take a moment and scribble some stuff down, I say go ahead and do it. But ask yourself those questions like how many problems and what problems is this going to solve for me realistically? And then prioritize your reliability and brand name over, you know, the looks and things, or I would say maybe sometimes even deprioritize some of the brand name stuff, because in a lot of instances we end up spending way more money than we need to purely to get brand name. Okay. And I think one of the places people do that a ton is optics on their rifles. That's not to say that the top brands and things like that are not worth it or quality products. What I am saying is that if you are running around in the woods with your buddies with a 13.9 or a 14.5 rifle, right, and you want to put a scope on it and you're balling on a budget, as they say, my recommendations are always to start with the budget line from SIG or from Vortex, because yes, there are more expensive options out there like Leopold, right, or Night Force. And then there's even more expensive stuff from like Zeiss and Swarovski and stuff like that, where you can spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Yeah. But do you need it? And is it made for what you're trying to do? In some instances, it's yes, you just can't afford it. In other instances, it's like, dude, that is not made for you. You know, like some of these 3-9 Burris scopes that people put on hunting rifles are not the optics that are made for you to put on your, you know, your Mark 12, your SPR or something that you're building out for a very specific application and purpose. And you have to understand that. It's, you know, any scope is not good enough. You should be looking at things very objectively, like, you know, does it have locking turrets? Is it mil versus MOA? What kind of reticle does it have? Is the illumination on it daylight bright? What's the battery life on this like? You know, what are the adjustments like? How is the reliability on it? What's the eye relief? You know, those are all just basic questions and things that I have and what I look for when I go to, you know, look at glass and stuff. And I don't buy scopes all the time. It's not my favorite thing to do. I do enjoy some distance shooting. It's really, really cool when you can go set steel out past 200 yards and just, you know, ring steel for a while, because you don't go through a ton of ammo. And it's really satisfying because you kind of just lay down and you prone out and you can get a buddy to spot for you sometimes and, you know, just have a good time with it. But the importance of all this stuff needs to be, especially with your nylon gear and stuff, it should be fit and comfort, even though some people will say that doesn't matter. Fit and comfort, training with it, is it durable, right? And then if you're able to, you should try this stuff before you buy it. You know, that's one of the things where it makes it way easier, right, to fall into what we were talking about earlier, the because my buddy has it syndrome. I'm not deaf to that. And that's why you get certain groups of friends where, hey, they all run, you know, the Faro FCPC, or they all run the OpsCore helmets and stuff. But you have to ask yourself those questions and you have to try and put some of that noise, so to speak, on mute, because with a lot of this stuff, comfort and fit are going to be very, very different from one person to the next. I think specifically, we haven't talked about these yet, is helmets. You know, and I love helmets. I geek out on that stuff online. The Headborne Systems page on Instagram, the dude is absolutely nice as hell, very, very knowledgeable. And the photos and content he puts out, really, really cool stuff. But I can sit there and I can doom scroll that page for, man, way more time than I care to admit out loud. I'll say that because I'm really intrigued by how everybody sets their helmet up differently. And it's because everybody's head is shaped a little bit different. It's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit smaller. They like having, you know, a high nape or a low, or they like, you know, bump helmets or carbon bump helmets. Or they like ballistics. That's what they need. And some people like having, you know, a bunch of stuff all over their helmet. Some people like being really lightweight and minimalist. So you can see that come through in their choices with the everything from the arms that they use to mount ear pro to their helmet. Some people don't mount ear pro and they run it under the helmet, to night vision setups and the different mounts and counterweights and strobes and things that all go into it. And then, you know, sometimes if you can even get a look on the inside, some people take it further and they will do like custom jobs on the padding that they select for their helmet, because I can tell you firsthand, having poor padding, with improper weight distribution and counterweight, and, you know, poor retention and suspension system, that being like your chin strap on the helmet, leads to hot spots. Or pressure points, right? They're called hot spots. And then you get like really, really bad migraine type headaches because you have all this pressure on the front of your head, like just over your eyes and your forehead. You can get it on the back of your neck, and or sometimes both, right? And it's these incredibly annoying and frustrating headaches, which I will tell you, when paired with the eye fatigue you can get from improper use of your night vision, again, ask me how I know, can really, really, really ruin the experience and make you way less capable and effective if you're that miserable and distracted by those things. So fit and comfort for things like chest rigs, things like plate carriers, helmets, even belts and, you know, thigh straps for holsters and stuff, the comfort to that has to be a consideration. It is very different than what a lot of people will tell you with handguns, where they'll say, just go, you know, a lot of guys say this, go buy a Glock. And just go shoot it. And they go, well, I don't like the grip angle, or it's too big, or it's too thin, it doesn't fit my hand. And you'll get tons of people on the internet, and they'll say, that doesn't matter. There is no such thing as fitting the gun to you. And I think that that is, to a degree, true. But I also don't believe in it wholeheartedly, because I've seen some people who really can't shoot go spend $850 or $950 on a HK VP9, I think, something like that, and then they still can't shoot, and it was the most comfortable gun they've ever held in their life. And it's like, dude, shooting is shooting. So you can make excuses to a degree with that kind of thing, but at the end of the day, some of this stuff, the comfort and things matter more than others. And again, that's where you have to understand as the consumer where that line is drawn, where it really makes a difference, and where it's kind of just a subjective opinion. And you know, you have to be thoughtful about this stuff, because when you mismatch your gear, you start piecemealing it based off of sales and from different companies and stuff, that can create some problems too. It can lead to a lot of wasted money. You know, I've seen guys, and some of them are really good dudes. Some of them are very squared away dudes. A perfect example of this, and I'll say his name because he's been on this podcast, and because I have a ton of gear questions for him all the time, and then I make fun of his choice in camouflage, is JT. You guys have heard JT on here. I think he's been on like 5 times. He's like my most repeated guest, like for sure. Because he's a super knowledgeable dude. He's out there doing real shit. Like, he wears plate carriers a lot. He does things like, you know, UC rescue. He's done counter sniper work. He's been on a SWAT team as a assaulter, I think, and as a sniper. So a huge variety of roles. And he is constantly, he's out there, he's constantly chasing the perfect gear setup. And it's different, right? Because he's doing this because his work depends on it. And also, he is smart enough through his experiences to understand, you know, when something is as good as it's going to get. And then, hey, if I swap this for something else, can I really make it better? And then also, you know, he can resell some of that stuff to make back some of the money. But he's, again, been doing this long enough. He understands you're going to lose a certain amount of money on this deal. And he knows exactly what he's looking for. It's very different, at least in my opinion, from a lot of people who will, you know, go buy different stuff just for the sake of it being different, throw it on there, not realize what they're doing, and they just waste money. And, you know, you have to understand what you're doing. You have to understand how to make it fit to you. Belts and holsters are a huge example of that. You know, guys will buy different belts, and oh, one's super rigid, oh, one's not rigid. The inner belt's super rigid, but the outer belt is super flimsy and crappy. Which there's a couple brand name belts out there where I'm like, why is your belt not more rigid with more scuba webbing? And people, you know, want to poo-poo that like it's not a big deal. And it's like, no, dude, that's a huge deal, because if your belt isn't able to hold up your gear and your equipment, and this is just as much a problem if it's rigid and not sized to you correctly as it is if the belt is just made poorly, it leads to things like slower draws. And you know, once your draw is slower, if you have inconsistent indexing with your with your primary hand when you go to initiate that draw stroke. Your draw is slower, your grip's inconsistent, means your accuracy is then going to suffer. And that's on top of just the general discomfort. And that's why you had so many guys, and you still see a lot of them out there, great shooters, they refuse to wear thigh straps because the comfort of it just wasn't there. You know, hey, I like having a mid-ride holster because it does make the draw easier, more accessible, more consistent, but that thigh strap will make me chafe after about 6 hours of walking through the hills. And it's like, guys online don't understand that, because a lot of them, myself included, have never had to go rucking through the hills for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And it leads to a ton of discomfort. And then when you're in that level of constant discomfort, and again, this could be your thigh strap, it could be your plates riding poorly because of the design of your plate carrier, or because you didn't know how to size your plate carrier and did it anyways, that level of discomfort bleeds over, all right? And it leads to mental frustration, lack of confidence, and a just overall distraction. So when you're, and I can put it in the context that I think applies to most of us, is that that means that you're not going to be as cognizant, as aware, as impactful, or as effective when you're out training with your buddies. And I'll tell you guys firsthand, man, nothing irritates me more when I go out and I do a lot of CQB training because I have learned a bunch of it. We have access to a facility here. You guys can go ahead and roll your eyes all you want. I can feel it. Like, as I'm sitting here recording this, I can feel how many people are going to roll their eyes because I said those words in that sequence. But it irritates me to no end. It irritates the shit out of me when we have guys that are not mentally able to stay checked in during repetitions and stuff, because we only get the facility for about 2, 2.5 hours, right? We have guys that are not able to stay mentally checked in because their gear doesn't work correctly. It doesn't fit correctly. Their belt doesn't fit. And they're literally, I've seen guys shim their belt with other pieces of clothing, like ball up a t-shirt and shove it between your belt and your battle belt to create tension to keep it on your waistline, because you don't want to spend the money to upgrade the belt. You can't properly retain your rifle to go put, you know, do cover contact drills because your sling isn't adjustable. It's a crappy, cheap sling, or it's not a sling at all. You just improvised one, or, you know, your plate carrier is riding so low on you that it's impeding other pieces of your gear and your kit. Or you have a helmet that doesn't fit and it's falling down over your eyes every time you stop, the momentum of your movement dips the front of the helmet. Like, I've seen all of that, and it causes problems when you're trying to get anything done, and potentially even dangerous problems. You know, think about that. If your vision is impaired and you're doing something like a night shoot, right, with night vision, and you have more money, you get more dollars, and you got sense, right? Everybody knows that one. And your night vision is not secured properly and you lose it, right? Either it slides forward out of your eye line or backwards on your head or something, and you squeeze off a couple of rounds, not being able to be absolutely accountable for where that's going, and now you have a huge problem. And that kind of shit happens because people will just, they'll go buy the helmet that they have to have because their buddy has an ops core. So they'll be okay just working with the XL that they got for a deal on Facebook Marketplace or something, even though they should have a large or a medium or whatever. And then it be, you know, oh, I saw these pictures in World War II. These guys all wear their hats on a, you know, on a slant. And it's like, dude, this ain't the fucking 40s anymore, dude. This ain't even, you know, Korea in the 50s. Like, you need to have equipment that fits your fucking head and does the job that it's designed to do. And people, you know, they miss that stuff. And there are just, and here's the reason, like, I get upset about it too, is because there are, without a doubt, smarter ways to build your setup. Like, guys don't, I can say this because I have the beauty of hindsight, and I've tried to be as consultative. I've tried to be as consultative as I can with people when they approach me and they go, hey, I have a rifle. I really want to buy kit. Kit meaning any of the gear we talked about so far, belt, chest rig, or a plate carrier, helmet, whatever, all of it, none of it, whatever. I mean, whatever. I want to start buying kit. I want to buy some gear so that I have the things that you have, or you guys here training have. And it's awesome, right? But there's smarter ways to do it. You should start with your essentials, right? So A, none of this matters if you don't have a firearm in most instances, right? And then from there, do you have a holster for said firearm is usually my next question. So if it's a handgun, do you have a holster? If you don't, are you looking to add a light to that firearm or an optic? And if so, then you should save the money, get the light first, then get the holster that fits that, because otherwise you are going to have to purchase a second holster. So like non-light bearing holsters won't fit a light. And if you put a gun without a light in a light bearing holster, it's going to rattle around a lot. And if it's a temporary measure while you're only doing training and you know for a fact that that's the temporary measure, it could be all right, but it's going to be really, really stupid. Same thing with a rifle. Okay, you have a rifle, and I actually had somebody, debate me on this on YouTube, right? I just did a rifle build out theory video again. Not so shameless plug. If you guys want to go check that out, at the time of this, it would be our most recent video. And the first thing I talk about is sling setup, right? And that's because your sling should be the first thing that you purchase for a rifle. Lots of guys don't do it. They go straight to, this is what this guy was advocating for in the comments, trying to tell me that I was completely wrong. And, oh, shake his head and, you know, the face slap emoji because he's a goober. Oh, you should buy ammo and an optic and a white light first and then worry about a sling. Your hands are your retention system. Like, dude, what? So if you have to stow this sling to apply aid to a buddy, what are you going to do? Or stow this rifle, I should say. Oh, you're probably just going to put it down in the dirt, right? Which is one of like those carnal rules. You really don't do that if you don't have to. You don't. Like, you want to retain that rifle. So what happens if you have to, you know, jump up and run away real fast or anything, like you're going to leave the rifle sitting there on the ground? No, your sling is your holster for your rifle, right? And lots of people refer to it as such. And that's why it has to be one of the primary and first things that you worry about. And get a good one, you know, and that's, I mean, a good one is subjective, but go buy one that you see a lot of people running. There's probably a reason it's pretty good. So something like, you know, I like the Spartan sling from Huberworks. They're out of Pennsylvania. Not the biggest company out there, but I will tell you guys, I've had a very good experience with Caleb, who is the owner, and I really like the sling. Additionally, there's other good ones out there. Faro makes the Slingster, which was my go-to sling before I found the Spartan. I think Spiritus has one now. Magpul, I would actually avoid the Magpul sling personally. I did not like it and have good experiences with it. I know Blue Force Gear, Blue Alpha Gear, they all make slings. Some of those I like, some of them I don't, you know, personal preference being what it is. There's tons of slings out there. Just get one that is adjustable and that's going to take care of you. And the same thing with your holsters. I'm a huge advocate for either Safariland or US Duty Gear, level 2 retention holsters. Level 2 meaning you have to, there's a little thumb lever you have to depress to unlock, right, the retention so you can draw the firearm. A lot of people will run these open face, like, or open top Kydex holsters that are just friction holsters. They're level 1, and it's because they see their favorite influencer out there with a branded holster, right, and they figure, well, if it's good enough for them and they came from this branch of the military, then it's good enough for me. And it's like, okay, yes, but what are you doing with it? If you're only flat range training and stuff, then yeah, it is fine. But if you're purchasing this to train, but you are also a police officer or you're also a security guard or something, having some kind of active retention, like a level 2 or even a level 3 that has the hood that folds over the top so you can't just, you know, index that gun super easily, you have to have something with some kind of retention. And people all the time, oh, well, you know, this so-and-so online had, I figured it was okay. Well, I mean, yes, but not necessarily. Make a good informed decision. Take the extra day or two or the extra week or two, do the decision, reach out to people. There's basically anybody who's been a guest on this podcast has been very open and very willing to answer questions. Whether it's the guys from Orion Training Group, we had Kyle from Core Vision on, you know, a couple of years ago, albeit, you know, guys like Bill Blowers who work and train in law enforcement space, X-Ray Alpha, you know, Matt Pranka, I'm sure he'd answer the question if he got it. A lot of really good, very knowledgeable dudes. Dutch Moyer, you know, former unit guy. Rick Hogg, another former unit guy. All those dudes, great resources, and every one of them shares their contact information at the end of the recording. Go use those resources, folks. Say, hey, I heard about you on Austin's podcast, you're on Prepared Mindset, and I had some questions, man. Can I pick your brain? go use those resources. They're out there and they're free, right? And then from there, things they become more, you know, important, like a light, medical, right? But build slowly. It always is so surprising to me when I see guys, and this is perhaps not in every instance, but perhaps in many instances, right? The most telltale sign of somebody who has not done enough research is the guy that shows up 1 week with nothing and the next week with everything. And you go, whoa, dude, what the hell happened? You went from having just a rifle with a sling last week to now having a plate carrier with a placard with a back panel, and then having a belt with pouches and a drop leg holster and a fully stocked med kit, and you have a different optic. And it's like, you did all this in 1 week. Like, how much fucking money did you go spend? And there's usually some kind of weird, stupid justification, but it's like, how much thought did you put into that? Did you put thought into it, or did you go buy what you saw somebody else running and in the course of a week have it, you know, ordered, delivered, and put together? And, you know, there's something to be said for having a good center of influence, having a good relationship with a mentor of sorts, right, who can give you healthy and strong recommendations on what companies to shop with, what gear manufacturers make good, reliable kit that is worth your money and is going to last the test of time, is, you know, made here in America or an American-based company. Hey, this stuff's really good, although it is made overseas. Like, you, the more information you have, right, the better decision that you can make. And it's one of the things that I did that I was most proud of, is that I bought my kit one piece at a time, trained with it, see if it helps, and then invest in the next thing so that if I have to go back and change it, I can. But I, for better or for worse, you know, I get really obsessive compulsive and somewhat anxious about all of these kinds of purchases and decisions, because I've been burned in the past by buying really cheap, shitty belts. Like I told you guys about the Condor Play Carrier I bought. I did also, but the fun does not stop there. I bought the first gen or second gen Condor Battle Belt, the big, you know, lumpy one that looks like you're wearing kind of like a diaper, right? And then I got a nylon drop leg holster that I ran with that belt, which was terrible. In all the ways that it sounds terrible. And then I bought really, really cheap, you know, magazine pouches and med kit. And this stuff was all flopping all over the place. And it didn't retain well because none of it was structural and rigid. And it all just secured by Molly straps. And if it was 2005, I probably would have been like styling and profiling. But it wasn't. It was like 2015 or 2017 or some shit. And I just did not have the things that I needed. And it was because I just went out and I wanted to build out a whole belt system. You know, I always come back to the stupid joke that Family Guy made when they make the $6 million man, reference, right? And they like, we have the technology, we can make him better, but we don't want to spend a lot of money. And it's like Peter Griffin is like a cyborg with like a garbage can on his foot and, you know, a crutch for an arm and whatever it is. And that's like a lot of times that's what I think about when I think of guys that want to build out an entire belt loadout and stuff, but then they don't want to be thoughtful about it and they want to do it on the super cheap. And they're like, oh yeah, check out all these, you know, Alice pouches and Alice webbing and all this Alice gear I got at like a estate sale. I can hold like 12 mags with this. And I'm like, yeah, it's fantastic. You know, there's a reason why the Alice gear got phased out and no one ever went back to it, right? Like, I'm not trying to be an asshole to people. I know some people, that's literally it's the only stuff they can afford. I get it. The economy right now, it's tough, man. I've had my difficulties. I've had my dark days too. And I try to never be sensitive to that. And if I have friends that are truly invested in this stuff, and I do mean truly, and are really looking to get better, I try to throw them some extra gear I have when I can. I try to be helpful. Like, I think that's like a really good part about being a mentor in this community, is if you have the ability to give a little bit here and there, that you do. And help your buddy next to you when they're going through some stuff so that you can help them be better. And because it's selfishly, it's a little bit self-serving, because the more that they can do, the more you guys can do together, right? When you go out and you train together, it's not that complicated of a process. That person becomes much harder to train with when they only have a rifle and a sling, because then you can't transition to handgun. You can't work reload drills because they don't have a belt or a plate carrier with a placard. Like, you get what I'm saying here. So if you can spare a couple pouches or an extra belt or whatever, especially if it's one that, like, I was literally looking at one that I have hanging on the wall the other day, and I'm like, I haven't touched this thing in over a year. Any of it. I haven't lent it to anyone. I haven't had anybody come shooting with me that would have used it. Like, I should do something about this, because I don't use it. So that's a consideration as well. And if you had somebody who, man, I really want to get better at this stuff, I really want to do this, I can't afford to drop this money right now. Hey, maybe, well, I can't give you everything, but I can give you this belt and these pouches. And that's a start, man. Oh, then your expense goes down from like $500 for a belt and pouches and a holster to like, now you just have to get a drop mount and a holster, which is maybe only 200, and maybe they can swing 200, or they can find a used deal on some of that stuff from someplace else. And then, you know what I mean? The whole thing becomes a little bit more attainable. So, you know, but be thoughtful. I think, and I've said that so many times in this, is do your research, be thoughtful, ask questions, be curious, you know, hey, why does that person have that on their kit? Do I need that? One of the things that I saw, it was possibly the best example of a trend that got real popular and then fizzled out very quickly, it's a flip up device that goes at the front of your optic. So not like a magnifier or something where it flips up behind the optic, but in the front where it adds, I think it adds like parallax or something. So you have adjusted holds. You can hold on the target instead of over it at a certain distance. And it's not to say it's a useless product. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there's a very certain kind of shooter and kind of person that knows how to use that effectively and needs it regularly for what they do and what they potentially teach that needs something like that. But you saw people throwing it on their rifles for a while, and I was like, okay, dude, are you actually going to use that? Do you actually shoot past 100 yards or 200 yards where point of aim, point of impact is going to be an issue? Like, no? Oh, okay, then you probably don't need to do that. Are you switching between different ammo, you know, subs or supers or something? No? Okay, then you really don't need the optic that allows for two different zeros to be stored electronically in the memory of the unit. Like, I think it's a Wilcox Boss, I think, that does that, but which is really cool if you need that. But if you're only buying it because it looked cool in Modern Warfare, then I think that right there as your justification should tell you everything you need to know. You're doing this for the wrong reasons. Don't do it. Stop it. So one of the things that I would very seriously challenge, right, all of us to do after listening to this, you know, and hopefully this kind of inspires you a little bit, is to go audit your gear. What you see this referred to online a lot and in the community as a lot is a shakeout or shakedown of your kit, right? So go through and check on everything you're doing, like what's working for me and what isn't. You know, hey, these shoulder pads that I, you know, added to my shoulder straps, are these comfortable? Is there a seam in some kind of, you know, awkward place or position that chafes my neck that I, you know, I really don't like? You know, I like the Faro shoulder pads on my FCPC. I think they're fantastic. I do have a number of friends or acquaintances in the industry, right, who like the Axle Advanced aftermarket pads because they put the seam on a different part of the product so it doesn't rub their neck and create a point of chafing or a hot spot or a raw spot or something. For me, the Faro ones are very comfortable. They don't cause any problems, and just how it sits on my body, because again, my body is different and built different than other people. I am a bigger guy in several dimensions. That's what she said. Or anyway, than some other folks are. So what works for me may not always work for you. You have to go ahead and try it for yourself. And sometimes you have to account for a certain degree of wasted spend. You know, hey, I think these, by all accounts, these shoulder straps are going to work really well for me, or shoulder pads rather, I'm sorry. They're going to work really, really well for me. I feel really confident in my purchase. I feel like I'm going to make a really good decision here. And then you go run them for 3 weeks and you find out like, hey, these things really bother me more than I realized. They're good for about, you know, half an hour at a time. But after that, it really starts wearing on me. And I didn't realize it when I tried it on my buddy's carrier. And that's okay, right? Excuse me, that's okay. It's going to happen. Hopefully it's with the more affordable items, you know, $50 and under. But go through it. Shake your kit out. Hey, is this working for me? Is this working for me? Hey, this pouch that I have, like I have one on my cummerbund for a fourth rifle magazine that periodically my sling hangs up on it. and I took it off for a while, and I'm putting it back on because I've learned some things about utilizing sling tension with your rifle to help create a more stable shooting platform. After talking to the gentleman at Team Anvil, and understanding, hey, that you know, your sling shouldn't just be this ultra loose necklace around your neck, or you know, ultra loose in any fashion that creates a snag hazard and other issues. And additionally, then it's not a benefit to you because before you do anything, you got to stop. You have to adjust your sling, and then maybe you can stow it or, you know, maneuver, do what you're doing. Utilize the sling for the benefits that it can offer you, whether that's tension to help stabilize a shot, it's to keep it tight to your body. So if you're going to render buddy aid, if you're somebody who's trying to do medical training or has to do medical training in your job, that's just like one very, very noticeable and good example. And, you know, if that sling works for you, good. It's probably not the sling. It's probably the pouches or the other accessories that you have strapped onto the outside perimeter, if you will, right, of your cummerbund or your plate carrier or whatever have you. So for me, it was a magazine pouch. You know, I've seen people have that issue with the huge radio pouches mounted to the outside of their plate carrier. I've seen that happen on belts and stuff with just, you know, poorly placed magazines. One of the things I see all the time, and I would encourage you guys, if you are serious about sitting down and auditing your kit, is the giant number of people out there that insist that they have to have a fixed blade knife on their plate carrier, or even worse, in many instances, you have to have a tomahawk or a hatchet swinging around on your fucking belt line because you think you're going to go out there and, you know, scalp a dude, or you know, you read it in a book written by your favorite Navy SEAL or something, and you want to have you know, a fake Winkler on your belt. Or maybe you're one of those morons that spent money on a real Winkler. I'm not saying you're a moron for buying Winkler. I'm saying you're a moron if you went out and bought Winkler, a Winkler tomahawk, and don't have any of your other shit squared away. There's a time in everyone's like gear journey and gear progression where it's appropriate to do shit like that. And if you've ever been downrange, like I haven't, right? I haven't. I was never in the military, never in law enforcement, right? Just a civilian, right? But if you've ever been downrange, this, you obviously, you know, this isn't for you. If you care, if you've been in a combat zone and you've actually done the things, right? Real life, real talk, bro. You know, you would probably agree with me that would be one of the last things that you would add onto your kit. Unless it's something that you used for a very specialized purpose for a very unique set of circumstances. Guys that are really about it will tell you that. You know, guys like Fred, Counting Coup Tactical, when he did his Shakedown video for Spiritus, and I wholeheartedly recommend you guys go watch the Shakedown series. I think it's called Shakedown, yeah, that Spiritus Systems did on their YouTube channel. Because you got guys from all different walks of life, you know, talking about the gear that they run, how they set it up, and why. And I thought Fred's is one of the coolest ones because you can see that it was like just beat to shit, set up for very specific reasons and very specific uses. And you know, he's got a tomahawk on his, and he's like, yep, it's for creating portholes in some, you know, materials in the houses, you know, overseas and stuff. Cool. Look at the other guys that did it. He had somebody from like a gang task force. You had guys that are Green Berets doing as an assaulter, commo, med, whatever. Those guys are not carrying that stuff, right? And then just likewise, you see a couple people in those different videos that have a breaching shotgun on their kit. I think maybe one or two, but you know, not everybody has to have that. But guys get really, really obsessed with having this stuff because they have money, it's burning a hole in their pocket, and their favorite person on the internet does it. I have friends that have done that stuff. They go buy the, the Mossberg Shockwave. They go, oh, it's a breaching shotgun. I'm like, well, technically, I think any shotgun could be a breaching shotgun. As I understand it, it has a lot more to do with the ammo and the application of that tool than it does with the tool itself. And then they get all butthurt and weird because they know I'm right. And they don't want to hear that they're, you know, SBS with the super rare revolver grip on their clone of a Remington 870 is kind of lame if they're not actually going to have the opportunity to regularly practice with it. And I don't think they will unless they are, you know, independently wealthy and can afford a bunch of training doors at a live fire facility that's going to let somebody like them do that. But I digress. The question that I would say you should ask yourself, and not just once, by the way, like you should probably every 6 months if you're training on the regular, and you should be training on the regular with your kit, right, is does this actually work for me? And be objective about it, you know, and be able to and ready to make the hard decision. Oh, I love this back panel because it's so cool. And my favorite influencer or my favorite, you know, former action guy, you know, he runs it. But like, if it's causing issues for you, get rid of it. You know, I don't need that. I have a good friend, right, who it was struggling with some of the structure clearance work we were doing. Hey, you are hitting every door frame known to man, dude. What the hell? And he's got this huge back panel on with a water bladder in it. And I was like, dude, you got to get rid of it. Oh, I like having water on me. Okay, dude, it's causing you problems. It's actually physically impeding you, and therefore it is impeding your ability to learn. It's stopping you from being successful. I'm not saying you got to get rid of it, man. I'm not saying throw it away. I'm not saying any of those things. What I'm saying is take it off for now. Fix the issues that you have. And yes, in a couple months, come back to it. Hey, have I fixed my issues? Am I able to get through this doorway or do whatever I need to do? Yes. Okay, cool. Then go ahead and add the back panel back onto your carrier and try again. You know, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing or now or never type situation with a lot of this gear. But seriously, sit down and take a very objective look at it and ask, does this actually work for you? And I think if you're honest with yourself, with most of us, there's at least one thing, probably, right, that any of us could look at our kit and go, do we really need to have that on there? And the answer is probably no. Now, the question that follows up that directly is, okay, is removing this going to give me any benefit? And if it's not, and it makes you happy, then, you know, whatever, fucking keep it, you know, whatever goofy patch or whatever you got from your buddy. That's cool. I have one on the back of mine that I'm like, hey, a buddy gave this to me. I was really, you know, honored and happy that he wanted to give me one. So I was like, ah, dude, I'm going to rock this shit. I'm going to leave it on my carrier. Patches are easy that way. Just don't be the guy that, for the love of God, don't be the guy that just covers yourself and every piece of Velcro you have with some kind of a patch or something. But to recap, you guys, you know, copying is bad, you know, like it really is, because it shows a complete, when I'm talking specifically, right, about copying gear, buying gear just because, right, like what we talked about, buying something just because you saw somebody else run it, it is a terrible decision. And it shows to everybody else around you that you don't take this stuff seriously, because what it shows, without having to say anything, having a conversation or anything, is when people figure that out anyway, what it says without you having to say it is, I put zero thought into this. I put zero thought and zero effort into my end goals. I don't understand my mission. I don't understand my needs, and I may not understand how to use my kit. And if you don't understand how to use the gear and kit that you have, you're not an asset to anybody. You know, you're a liability because you're just covered in shit that could potentially cause more problems than you could solve, because you don't know how to use any of the tools that you're carrying on your body. That includes the nylon that facilitates those tools, whether it's magazines or multi-tools or the thing from, it was a Good Dude Concepts, his pry bar. And I apologize, man. Like, there's only so much bandwidth within my brain to remember kit and gear. You know, but I mean, just look at it and man, make the decision to be more informed. You know, there's a lot of influence that you can have on both sides of this, either by just demonstrating that you're willing to buy something different than the rest of the group. You know, John's fantastic for that. And it's not just, he doesn't buy stuff just because it's different. He does a lot of looking, a lot of researching. And then on top of that, he usually does find something that's different than what anybody else runs. Like, he went out and got the M-Tech, I think it's the Flux, is their super lightweight ballistic helmet. And I was like, what is that? I'd never heard of it. And I think it's the Flux anyways. That's the one that's got the rails on it. And then he went out and got the Voitech belt, I think the Bear Solutions belt, that uses like holes punched in it, right, for mounting solutions rather than Molly, right? And it's just a very different way of approaching stuff. He loves it. It's outstanding. There's a lot of guys that run the Bear Solutions belt. You know, Drew's fantastic, and his gear is also, you know, very good. There's a lot of thought, right, and consideration that went into the development of that belt system. So it doesn't have to be the belt that everybody else is running. And just remember that in the military and law enforcement, that's issued equipment. Like, oh, Delta all run this belt. That's how you know it's good. It's like, well, whatever unit, doesn't even have to be Delta, you know, oh, the Rangers run this. Well, the Rangers run that because they're fucking issued that. And in a lot of instances, yes, they can go buy their own, you know, kit and gear to supplement what they are issued, but a lot of them don't. And I think it's a pretty poor assumption to believe that every one of them is a gear master. A lot of them are, many are not, right? And talk to people that have served, there are people who are not gear masters. They aren't really into all that stuff. They find ways for what they have to work, and that is enough for them. They have no interest in spending their own money out of pocket. And when they get out of service, they go do something completely different with their lives. Not everybody that served in the military is a master of these things and these concepts. So I hope what I've been ranting and raving here about, you guys, I hope this is helpful, you know, because I think as we see more people try to turn to this community and this lifestyle and things, this increase in personal preparedness and personal accountability, right? We have more people buying gear. We have more people looking at buying kit because they want to, at least to some degree, be more capable, whether that's just a belt, so they have a holster, and then they just run a rifle. They're not worried about armor plates and a chest rig or anything like that. They're just going to have that little bit. Okay, fine. Or people that go the whole distance and they go buy plates and then they buy a plate carrier and then they, you know, they're doing this stuff and they're going all in because they want it. And I think that's fantastic. We have the opportunity to be an influence by saying, no, don't do that. Don't go buy this just because it's what I have. Don't buy this just because what you see me use it. Like, there could be something better out there than what I run. I don't know that the FCPC is the do-all, end-all plate carrier. I've had many people tell me they think it's a terrible plate carrier, and I have every time gone, all right, it's not for you. That's totally fine. I think it's a fantastic plate carrier because for how I'm built and my needs and what I looked for, I loved that plate carrier. I thought it was fucking outstanding. I tried my buddies on. I really liked it. I have liked the other Faro stuff I've used, so I felt very comfortable making a decision to build out their entire, you know, carrier ecosystem. But we should really, really push back on each other. Like, friends need to not let friends buy gear just because it's what they have. Be well informed, make better decisions, and, you know, I think everybody will be a lot better for it when everything's said and done at the end of the day. So thank you guys for coming to my TED Talk about more gear and hoarding it and making stupid ass life decisions based off of the internet. And, you know, if you are one of the people that have a friend that needs to hear this, by all means, you should send them this recording link, or send them to me, I guess. I'm happy to have that discussion with folks. You don't have to be a total turd about it. You don't have to be a dick to your buddies. Like, if you're supposed to be trying to build a training group, it's, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to have a constructively critical conversation. Hey, man, you are buying everything that I have. Why? And if it's, well, I just like what you have, that's not a well thought out answer. Like, all right, I think you should stop and, you know, maybe we can have a conversation about this. Like, I think I bought really good, you know, gear for what I need. Is that the same things that you need? Are you built the same way? Are you having problems like with any of this? Hey, you know, I actually don't love this unit or this piece of equipment. Like, hell, what if it's a huge investment, right? Like, what if you made a mistake buying night vision, right? You went to our friends over at Custom Night Vision and you bought a housing that you absolutely cannot stand. You were told that the fixed bridge RNVG was the best unit to buy out there because it's the simplest. And you go and, you know, you don't want to talk shit about yourself to your friends. You tell how great it is. And in the back of your mind, you're like, I don't know if I would ever done this again. Your buddy goes out and buys the same thing. And you would like, dude, if you would have asked me, dude, I would have told you, I do not like this fucking thing. And that there's better choices out there. Like, that's realistic, you know? And when you make investments into stuff like night vision, like, damn, that can get real pricey, real fucking quick. And you could have helped save your friend some grief, some heartache, some misery, definitely some money in a lot of those cases. Same thing with, like, you know, lasers or suppressors. We didn't even talk suppressors, right? Any of that shit. And you could have helped them if they had given you the opportunity to do so by just asking the questions, by being thoughtful, by wanting to check stuff out. Now, the last thing I will say as I'm thinking about this, because, you know, the forefront of my mind is, if you want to check out gear, like, dude, go talk to your friends, go talk to people at the range, go, you know, talk to people in your training circle. Like, hey man, can you bring this tonight to training or today or during the weekend? Like, I'd really love to get hands on because I'm looking at buying one, but I have questions about it. I don't quite know how it fits. I don't quite know how it works, blah, blah, blah. And most of the time your homies are going to be super cool with that. But I will say this, as somebody who has been fucked over at least a couple times in recent memory by people doing this shit, please, for the love of fucking God, ask people before you grab their shit. Because nothing pisses me off more than when people grab the fucking drag strap that I have attached to the back of my carrier that I added on my own, right? And they pull on that thinking it's a handle like a backpack to lift up the plate carrier because whatever carrier they had has a backpack strap on it. The drag strap sucks balls and it's just stitched into the plate bag. And then now I have to pull off my back panel. I have to rewind up all of this fucking, you know, tubular nylon, re-stow it, and then I can put my back panel back on. And the whole thing takes me like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, just a pain in the ass to do it unnecessarily because somebody put their hands on your shit without fucking asking. And that's all I'll say about that. It's something that I'm like really passionate about. I'll let almost anybody touch my stuff. You know, hey, you want to see my plate carrier? Cool. Hey, you have questions on my helmet? Cool. You want to see my night vision? You want to try night vision? You want to see the laser? Cool. I'm happy to share all of this stuff with you. If you have the common courtesy to fucking ask me before you start putting your mitts all over stuff. I feel like a lot of us spend a lot of money on our gear, and we are pretty protective of it because that's how shit gets fucked up. You know, and that's, you know, even if it's just running a battery down because you turn on somebody's IR laser and don't tell them that it runs down or whatever, or you leave it turned on. My brother has done that to me a couple of times where he comes over, he checks out, he turns on like optics or illumination on scopes. And then it's a gun that I don't shoot a lot. And he just puts it away like that. And then I go turn it back on and it's on like setting 7. And I look through it and it's dead. I'm like, great. Now I got to fucking swap a battery out if I want to take this out because somebody else had their hands all over my shit. So something I take pretty personally, something I take a lot of pride in is making sure my stuff is maintained. And when I put it away, I expect it to be in that condition when I go back to it. So just a word of wisdom, a word to the wise, you know, as it is, for those of you guys out there that are dealing with that kind of stuff. So that's all I got though. Thank you guys so much for checking this out, listening to me rant. I'm in like an hour and 20 minutes as I'm getting to this point. It always kind of amazes me when I get started on these tangents and things where I'm like, I'm going to talk about this. And like, I can look at the little timer while I'm recording and it's like 35 minutes. I go, man, I'll never hit time. And then I'm ending up pushing, you know, my 90 minute limit that I have for myself, with some of this, cause I just get fired up and I got a lot to say. So, I do hope that this is helpful. I do hope that's enjoyable. I have a really exciting, discussion that I'm looking forward to for next week. So make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button. Make sure you're signed up to get notifications because we're dropping episodes every week and a monthly sit rep discussion on current events. So don't miss any of that stuff, you guys. Thank you so much for hanging out. Stay safe out there. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.